Welcome to Rheinfunk's new podcast series on natural wine. For those listeners who are already familiar with the Rheinfunk podcast, this theme might be a bit puzzling. After all, our podcasts normally tap into the topic of the human mind by interviewing scientists, authors, and artists. What does natural wine have to do with this topic? For us, natural wine has everything to do with the human mind, ranging from the work in the fields, the vinification, and the drinking of it. We're personally deep admirers, fascinated by the people who make it and the profound experiences these wines offer. Throughout the years, one question has returned to us again and again. Is natural wine an art form, or is it merely an agricultural product? This is an intriguing question, and we pose it to producers and importers of natural wine in the present series. This will take you on a journey around Europe, between cities like those of Paris, Munich, and to the countryside of southern France. In this episode, you will meet the winemakers Anders Frederiksten and Anne Brun Blauert. Even though they're both Danish, Anders and Anne live and make wine in the small and old village of Valvigneret in Ardèche, southern France. We completely fell in love not only with Anders and Anne's bottles, but also with their approach and mentality about winemaking. It was a great pleasure to visit the beautiful home in Valvigneret, where they live with their daughter, son and sweet dog. Their wines are really amazing and very distinct. Personally, some of the best we've had in our lives. We cannot recommend them enough. Check out the link for Anders and Anne's wines in the description for the podcast. And moreover, Anders has written a very inspiring book on winemaking and wine drinking. You'll also find the link for the book in the description. We hope you enjoy the interview as we did.
We are
in a region, it's not very known, it's called Ardèche. It's a kind of a sub-region of the Rhône Valley.
Yeah.
So the Rhône Valley is best known for the northern appellations that are the very expensive, exclusive wines of Gros Hermitage, Hermitage, all these Champs-Joseph. And Côte de Rhône in the south, with a historical, long history of producing relatively interesting wines, but not very expensive wines. And we are situated roughly in between these two areas, historically a very poor country. So a little bit of wine growing, because the soil, where the soil permits wine growing, we grow wine. But most part of the area here is for animals, for cheese production, and forest. That reflects also, the people living here, of course.
Yeah. Mm-mm. And we're sitting in your home right now, which is this amazing stone house in a small village. Could you describe what kind of village is this?
It's a very small village. There are 300-400, I think, people living here. But not here in the center. It's a very small center. But then I think there are only 40 people living.
Yeah.
So it's a very small village. There is a small school. There's a baker, one hotel, sometimes two when the other one is open. So it is a very small village on the countryside.
Very old?
Also very old.
Very old, yeah. The whole valley where we are situated is... the first villages here are constructed by the Romans when they came. So north from where we are, it's Alba la Romaine. With all the historical things of Roman Empire, whatever they built, theaters and all these things. And Valvigneret, the village where we are, in Latin it means Vallis Vinaigre, so the valley of vines. and the valley of not only vines, the plant, but also the wine itself. So the product, the liquid, I would say, the product wine. And well, a village carrying this name explains that it's a place where wine production has been taking place for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
And actually our house and the church just next to where we live is roughly 1,100 years old. Maybe the village is older. I have no clue about that, but but at least where we are is, but it's also old enough, I think.
Yeah. And the vineyards are actually like very close to the city or the village, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are all around the village, but also on, how do you say, a little bit outside the village.
Yeah, and the hillsides.
Because I think the main production here in this village is wine growing. Some people are growing wines to the Kaff Cooperative, where you grow wine, you sell your grapes, and they make wine out of it. And then there are some winemakers, mostly organic wine makers and natural winemakers. So I think maybe 90% of the people living here are living
of wine production
growing. In growing or wine making.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of dense.
Yeah.
So when did you move here?
We came in 17, so 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And but before we came, Anders, he started, you can explain that maybe better than I, but we started in 13 coming here and making wine and just traveling back and forward between Copenhagen and Valvinia.
Yeah.
And then I think in 16 we started talking about if we should do something else in our life. So we saw this as an opportunity to make a life change also, and because we wanted another balance between our work life and also our family life.
Yeah.
And so we saw that, okay, we have an opportunity to go somewhere where we have a purpose to go, not just, okay, where do we want to go, but we saw that, okay, we could move here, we could actually do something for a living. You knew someone, or you knew Sybil before we came, so it would not be like a shift where we moved to nothing, where we didn't know anyone, and at the same time we were not interested in to moving a place and do office work again. We wanted to really make something different. And also you wanted to, as you started this in 13, just as a fun project to see how it is to. So it was also a way to see, okay, can we go further with this? But it also meant that we had to be here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's why we decided to go here.
Yeah.
So, and I think and then we were like, okay, we're going to see the first year. I had from my job, they said, okay, if it doesn't work, you can come back after a year. And then after a year, we were like, okay. Then I received the mail from my boss saying, are you coming back? I was like, then we totally forgot to answer. So we were like, okay, maybe that means that we're settled here and we're good. So we decided to stay. Yeah.
We started, I mean, Anne partly explained it. When we started in 13, I was, I came here already in the few years early in 2008-09. To buy wines for Copenhagen. I was importing wines and I was a restaurateur in Copenhagen, so I wanted to buy natural wine into Copenhagen actually, and that's why I came in the first place. And in 13 I wanted to dig deeper into natural wine and deeper into the production of wine. My purpose for that was simply to become a better sommelier. Actually, I wanted to know, to better understand the wines. So I thought if I could make one or two vintages, it would be an interesting way to get into the practical part of the wine. I only knew, how can you say, knew it from the part where it was either fermenting juice or finished wine in bottle. So I needed to explore the steps before that.
Yeah.
So 13, 14 was mainly about doing as many different kinds of vinifications and all these things as possible to learn and to understand. And as many other things that you dig into, you get you get eaten by it, you know, you get absorbed by the passion of just learning, you know, and the curiosity. And it was exactly the same feeling. I couldn't let go. So instead of letting go of the winemaking, I let go of everything in Copenhagen. And by going back and forward in 13, 14, 15 and partly 16, I also saw that the wines we made, they were driven very much by the curiosity of making them, but the quality of the wines only, for, I at least think that, for my own personal ambitions, they only reached a certain level. Because the lack of time I spent here, the little time, even though I spent a lot of time here, I didn't spend the full year, and I could only push the wines to a certain level. And I wanted to go further. So I remember we talked about it in 16, and it was either quitting the winemaking or going more into it.
Yeah.
And as I just mentioned, we wanted this change. So, and the business was here, and we had already a thing rolling. So it was also an easy decision, an easy solution to something that we wanted to do. And also the fact that 13, 14 was wines I made with a friend of that time, and I had a few years in between and came on board where I was only myself in the winemaking. And this way of working alone was not really pleasant, I think. Not that I didn't like it, but I only talk about myself in this point, but I think it's more interesting to work when you are two or three or four than alone.
So,
yeah, much, much more fun. So for me, having Anne with me in this project was a very natural, in the beginning, very natural desire or idea.
Yeah.
And now that she's been here and we've been doing this together for 6 years, it's a completely natural thing. We discuss everything. We make the things together. It can be in the cellar or in the vineyards or whatever. It's decisions, and the things we do is constantly in both of our minds. And that's a big privilege, I think.
Yeah.
You often see it with writers or artists or musicians, and they group up and they live together with their, how do you say, with their partners, of course, and they share Michi in French, I don't know how to say it, their work life. They share their work life with their partners. And often it's where it really becomes interesting. It's people that can, they live off their passion and they constantly discuss what they're doing. It demands a lot for a couple, I think, to do that, but it's also very interesting because you have a work partner that you can trust 100%, you know. You never need to think about if it's one ego or the other ego, or is one idea is better than the other idea. All these things that can create problems between people working together.
Mm.
When you are a couple, I consider us as not one person, but one unit in some way.
Mm.
So it's much more free in the format.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, when you moved from Copenhagen, Anna has revealed a bit what he worked with, but did you work with wine before?
No, never. I worked in the Danish prison and probation service.
Yeah.
Or I also worked at the hospitals as a social worker.
Yeah.
So it was completely other work life.
Yeah.
And so coming here, I actually didn't knew anything about making wines, or I just like drinking wine. and of course I knew some because you have been speaking about it and you've been making it since 13, but I think when we lived in Copenhagen, our work life was very separated. He had his and I had mine, and so it was not, so for me deciding to quit my job and to do something completely different, I think it's not only the wine, it was also that we had the opportunity to create a business on our own. We had the possibility to work outside, not sit in an office, and also to have another structure in our lives. And then I just had to learn it a little bit. But I think sometimes I know we speak a lot about how we work and what we do, but I think it's funny how you have your educational background with you and how solid it is, because that's the big difference between us, that the way you have been working your whole life, it's the education, and I don't have it, so that is a big difference between us and the way we think. But sometimes I think it's also a good thing for us, because the natural wine, or just maybe the wine, drinking wine, can sometimes make people a little bit insecure, I think, sometimes, because you think, oh, does it taste of nuts or pineapple, or what do I think? Do I like it? And so I think we had many discussions like that. Like, I'm like, why can't I just drink it? And if I don't like it, I don't like it. And then I don't care if it tastes like nuts or pineapple or cherries or whatever. So I think in that way, it gives a good balance, I think.
Yeah, and, sure.
And then there has been a lot of things that we had to learn from scratch, both of us, like driving a tractor and
practical stuff,
but also just running a business in France. It's not always that easy, but we manage.
But it's sure Anne has a good point, because I have a very theoretical background in wine. I worked as a chef and sommelier in Copenhagen, but I also did a very classical school of wine in London for several years. And of course, as you say, and it has another, with my background, I have maybe another more classical approach to knowledge in our field. But combined with all the things and don't know, I think that is the interesting part, because she can allow herself to ask very honest, nude questions, you know, where I in some way have to pretend to know, you know what I mean? Because I am educated in this stuff, so I should know. So even unconsciously, you stop asking some questions because you either think you know it, or you think you should know it, or whatever. When you don't know nothing, you can just go into whatever question and ask it very... how do you say, naive in some way.
But
and
I
that,
think
that opens a lot of interesting
stuff,
I think.
Yeah, but I think there are many levels in winemaking, because it's not just what is the final product. Is it a good wine or a bad wine? I think I had learned, and also I really have deeply respect for the winemaking, because it's so many things can go wrong in the process. So you really need to know a lot of things, I think. I mean, it's not just picking grapes, putting them in to a press and then in a cuve and then that's it. I think there are a lot of... And also you... I don't know, I think maybe for us it's been also very important to... How do you say? To know what we want to produce and what kind of wine we want to make and what kind of wine we like to drink ourselves.
Yeah.
So that's we talk a lot about. But it's also been very important for us to make wines in a high quality.
Yeah.
So and keep our production small. And I think
And when you say high quality, it is also a way of talking about wine that can confuse people a little bit, because what is high quality? Is it Burgundy wine? Is it champagne? Is it whatever? All these high end, it could be high quality wine, but at least for Anna and I, when we talk about high quality, of course it's the product itself has to be of a quality that is high, has to be a good wine. But
I think that,
but behind all these things, there's also the production of the grapes, how it's
the quality of the grapes, and I think we also work a little bit more holistic in that way, because we also think the way we, how are the conditions for employees, how are the conditions during harvest, how are the conditions when we work, and so we think that all that has an impact on the winemaking and also the result in the bottle.
So for us, the high quality wine also represents organic grapes, grapes grown in a way, treated in a way that is responsible to the environment, but also having the team of harvest people paid correctly, serving them lunch. There's so many aspects in these. Is this definition of high quality wine? If you go to Burgundy, it's a group of harvesters that comes from Northern Africa or Eastern Europe. They're paid 5 euros an hour. They live under conditions that is not good enough, and I think it's sad actually, because it shouldn't be like that. And we cover up things that are supposed to be great, organic wines, high quality wines, whatever you like to call it, and behind the label, behind the glitter of the production, but that's another reality. And people tend to forget that.
Yeah.
Or at least the producers tend to forget to talk about it. And the consumers, when they don't know about it, it's difficult to ask these questions and get the knowledge about it.
Yeah.
So that's at least for us and the group of people we're working with here, is something that we value very, very much and try to, it's a big thing for us. It has to be done correctly. And it's also what reflects our wines. And said just now that for us, that's also the purpose of the winemaking in some ways. It's we sell our wines all around the world. And it's not, I don't want to make it sound like a Robin Hood business, but the thing is, we take the money from Japan and New York and Los Angeles and whatever big city and country around the world. We bring it back to our little region here, and we can pay young people that are unemployed. We can serve lunch for the people and during harvest and pay them correctly. We grow our own grapes, but we also buy grapes in other winemakers' places. And we can pay a correct price without discussing this, so they also can pay their employees correct, and so on. There's so many layers of this that all together makes a more.
I think it's just about decency.
Decency, voilà.
It's
true.
I mean, and to be honest about this is, and we often, I think sometimes we. You have to go to bed, to go to sleep without having a pain in your stomach or stress. And I think for us, it's about being decent. And I think in this area, I don't think we see a lot of problems with it. But I don't know. I think it's more in other areas.
Yeah.
These values and principles, did you have them in mind before you moved here? For example, the way you produce grapes and the payment of the workers, and or did you develop them when you came here?
I think we always had it with us as people, and also in our previous work life. I mean, you had two restaurants, and I know you struggled a lot with it because the the restaurant scene in Copenhagen is not always that beautiful. And I think me coming from a background working with a lot of young people or adults with a lot of social problems, I think, but it's not only because of that. I think it's you treat people with respect and you get a lot of things back in return. I think it's that simple. So I think for us it's been important to have a business and also grow wines and a production that is true to who we are, also in our family life and in general. And I think we're lucky that a lot of other people in this area has also the same way of thinking, but also a lot of people here like to take a social responsibility, and I think it's I think that's very important. So, and I think maybe for the wine growing, a lot of things has developed bit by bit. Don't you think the,
sure, yeah.
Because we didn't know anything actually about that. How to work the soil, to treat the wines, to do we want to? I think when you come from the outside, and we are not, don't have any family, we don't have a father telling us what to do, which is the case for a lot of wine growers here in the area. We could do what we wanted. We could be like outsiders, being a little bit stupid, and so we could ask ourselves the questions: do we want to drive the tractor 10 times a year? Do we want to work the soil? Do we want to treat with sulfur? Do we want to let the grass grow as high as we want? And because
We had alternatives, because I think with our position, as I said, from being from another place than born here, we created our own business. We didn't have parents or grandparents or whatever that handed it over to us. So that with that comes a lot of freedom, actually. It might seem to be the other way around. When you are given something by your parents, it gives you a freedom. But it's also
I think you also have to continue in, or they feel they have they need to continue in the same way of working and the same way of also living. So it can be very difficult to say, okay, now we will try to do something else. But at the same time, it's true we had the freedom to do what we wanted and to create it like we did, but we also had to hear a lot of things about it. So sometimes I'm like, oh...
Super curious about that.
Yeah, you know, so I remember one time we heard someone said, have you seen Anders and Anders' place? It looks like a mess. Looks like they're not working.
The vineyard?
The vineyard.
In French, you have a way of
they
talking about...
They say it was moche.
Okay.
And that means it's like... How can you...
Yeah, ugly.
Ugly or...
In French, you also say about vineyards that they are... sont sales. It means they are dirty.
Okay.
They're dirty, and it means that there are grass and plants growing in the vineyards. If you can't see the soil, wine growing has to be a monoculture. If you ask a good wine grower, have to be wine plants, naked soil. You can either work the soil or you can use pesticides or Roundup or whatever you want to kill everything except the vine. If you do that, you're a good farmer. You get up in the morning, you start your tractor, you go back and forth.
All the neighbors can see that you work hard.
When you go home in the evening, people see you have you've been working. We did it the other way around. We with the principles and the ideas from permaculture, we started to stop. I don't know how to say that sentence.
No, but
we stopped working the soil and we started to leave the plants and the grass and so on and the flowers and all these things. Grow in the vines, and that brought with it brought a lot of diversity in terms of insects, birds, other animals, and so on. And also we saw that the soil was changing in terms of less dead and more alive in a way. And in the beginning it was a very complicated process, because the herbs and the grass that were growing were too much
competition.
Too much competition. It was too powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And since I think 1 year, 1.5 years, it started to change. And it's not similar to a jungle or a forest. We're not on that level. But the balance between the plants, different plants, is now more equal in a way, where the vines is just one of them.
Mm.
And then there's the flowers and the little tree behind, whatever, and tick-tack-tack, all these things. And it started to create another balance in the soil. And that actually has now helped us to also do the treatments of the vines. That is a big issue in wine growing, because normally you treat the leaves and the grapes and the plants in general with a lot of products. If you do conventional chemical production, you can use many, many things, very horrible, horrible things.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are organic or biodynamic wine grower, you can use copper or sulfur or many other things. And all these unnatural things, since 2 years, 2.5 to 3 years, depends on different products, we took away all these things and are now only using salt water, extraction of herbs, lacto-fermentation, do special kinds of tisane, so it's like a tea of different plants in specific periods, essential oils, stuff like that. And that is working as a preventive treatment against the...
The idea is to see the plant as a human being. So the more healthy you are and the more strong you are, and if you get sick, then you don't get as sick as if you don't.
Yeah, you manage to resist.
You manage to resist it. And so that was the idea of changing it, because also we saw that a lot of diseases during the summer and also in the springtime, they were occurring here in the area, and the solution is often, okay, then we just treat more with more products.
Yeah.
So, and then we were thinking, how could we prevent that situation in our place?
Yeah.
But the thing is that it's so also so difficult to compare with others, because our vineyards are very isolated, so we don't have any neighbors who are treating with chemicals, for example.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to say if there is an impact of that or not.
Yeah.
But at the moment we don't have any diseases, but we never know, because that changes from year to year.
Did you take over vines, or did you plant?
We are renting.
Yeah.
So, and we took it over. When we took it over, they have not been worked for a couple of years because the owner died. So when they were not abandoned, but they were in a very bad condition.
Yeah.
But I think maybe sometimes it also how Anders and I work and how we go to, like, buying this house, it was a ruin. Okay, then you can create it in the way you want it, because no one has put a window where you don't want it.
Yeah.
So I think so we were like, okay, this is bad. It can only be good from here. So and so the first couple of years it was a lot of work, very hard work.
Yeah.
And I think now we're at a place where we can say that they're in a very good condition now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a different flow from you now?
Yeah. It is definitely a different flow, but also we learned a lot during the last years. I think when we started just pruning, when we pruned, we were working slow because it was like, okay, do we cut here? Do we cut here? What do we do? Now after 4 seasons, we're like... So I think I think we are getting more and more comfortable, and we also know what's coming.
Yeah.
We didn't know that in the beginning because we didn't have the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And also because they were in a bad condition, so we didn't know if it will be good or if it would stay in that way. So, and no one else wanted them, so that's why we took them. But I'm glad we made that decision. I think
What's also, I think, been interesting from moving from buying grapes as we did in the 13 until 17, and in 17 starting to grow our own grapes, was to, I mean, when you buy grapes, you go pick them and you bring them back to your cellar, you do the vinification and you can close the cellar and you can leave, and that's it. It's quite easy way to make wine. But when you grow your own grapes, you also need to adapt and accept that it's nature taking the lead, and you are there to to follow in some way. Sometimes you walk a little bit ahead, sometimes you run a little bit behind, and that's also, I mean, that at least for me, it's been one of the big learnings in moving out of Copenhagen, out of the restaurant business, where it's from 6:30 in the evening until 2 o'clock in the night, and then you close and you go home. Here in the spring, but the wines, they also grow on the Sundays, and they also grow after, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So the, if you don't move, if you don't work in the same tempo as the vines, but you get behind, or if you work too fast, yeah, but you miss something, or you do things. You need to be very much in the same rhythm as nature.
And I think also the way we have decided to work, you really need to be present.
Mm.
When you work preventive, you really need to be there to see, okay, now it's... Because the problem is, if there is a disease, you can lose a lot of your harvest, and that's not what we're interested in. And it can also affect the quality of the grapes, but... So...
Mm-mm.
Yeah, so... Yeah, just being there.
When you're out there, do you have, I know it's a big question, but do you have like a, can you have these moments where you feel like a very spiritual connection to the grapes, or are you very in a work mind all the time? How would you, and I guess it can be many different things.
Yeah, but spiritual, I'm not sure, but emotional, I talk for myself at least, very much. In 2021, we had a big hailstorm that ruined our vineyards completely. They took away all the grapes, all the leaves, everything. It was very, very violent. And I felt it just after the hailstorm. That was a big emotional thing. But maybe the more logical part of me saying, you lost the harvest, what's going to happen with the economy, and all these things. And several months after, there was another wave of emotions again. Because you started to see the plants, how much they suffered actually. From it was 15 minutes of hailstorm, so it's still now, 2 years after, we see a lot of damage in the vineyards because of this. And when you work with plants as if you work with animals or people or whatever you work with, you get a connection. And it's not necessarily spiritual for me, but it's very much emotional. I think it's like you see a kindergarten teacher experience one of the kids in the kindergarten being beaten at home. She will also, or he will also be emotional affected by this, I imagine. I hope. Otherwise they should do something else, but I imagine they will. And the same goes, at least for me, when we're moving around in the vineyard and you see stuff, and you also... Now these days, since 3 weeks, the almond tree started to be in flower, the cherry tree started. Now, you know, you see nature is now starting first gear, second gear. They started, the beginning of the spring is in a slow start. And it, for me, it also brings feelings in. I know now we will soon be, you know, attacking the spring, and it will be a busy period, and it will be a lot of these energies. And I get a little bit excited about it, and I think that's the pleasure of being in the vineyards in the way we are and as much as we are, because of course it's physical hard labor, but that's just part of it. The pleasure of being there, you start to observe nature differently when you're there, and it's also the same spot every day. We go into a forest, and the next day we go on the beach, and the day after we go to the mountains. We go every day to the same vineyards, we see the same things. We started to, you know, there's Pirouge, I don't know how to say it in English. There's a couple of birds, and we see them several times every week. And I mean, they become our neighbors. It's a small, stupid thing, but it's a very rich thing to experience, I think. And the same goes for the grapes. When we close into getting closer and closer to harvest, all these questions about when to harvest, what to harvest, what to do with the grapes, in what way should we do the vinification, should we do direct press, maceration, pick them now, wait 1 week, all these things. There's one part reflection, another part intuition, and then the last part is very much Anne and I talking and being, okay, now it's there. Now you taste the grapes, they are tasting so great, so it has to be now. And then we will figure out what to do with them, because it's impossible to explain to anybody, but it's you know when they're there. You put them in your mouth and you taste something, and it's giving you like a musical feeling. You know, some people, they listen to a piece of music and they don't care about it. They just, okay, it was another piece of music. And you, for example, you sit in your car or whatever and you listen to a piece of music and you start to laugh or start to cry. It's the same. It's something you can't explain, but it's there. It's an emotion, and it's a feeling that is so instantly present. And you just need to follow it. And that is something that I had to learn, and also learn to adapt and also accept. I think that's, at least for me, been the hardest part of not being a restaurateur and start being a winemaker. It's because you lose control. Every day you lose control. And winemaker is a very bad word for what we do, because we're not making anything. Actually, we observe what's going on, and we get the grapes in, and we start to help the grapes to be wine. But basically, we can't say it becomes wine by itself, because it's not true. We have a lot to do with the making of the wine, but it's not us making it only. It's also the following part, the wines appear by themselves a little bit. Mm. And that's also a magical thing. You grow grapes during a year, you know. You take the yesterday evening when you came into the village, we've been putting engrais, fertilizers, yeah, from chickens and some other birds into the vineyards. And these fertilizers has an impact this year. A month ago we put in some things from sheep's, and the impact of this will only be seen next year. So we already now, this winter, started to prepare for 24. And when we harvest 24, it will be several weeks of working in the harvest, and then 1 year, 2 years, 3 years in the cellar. Mm-hmm. So now we're in 23, winter 23, and the harvest of 24 is already in the making. Mm-hmm. And it's not even in bottle yet. It will be in bottle in 5 years maybe. So that's also the long-term thing of wine, is that it's every day, it's decisions and choices you make, and the impact is so long. Mm-hmm. And that is, I mean, that's what I think is the most interesting part of winemaking, is that you just take a step back and you accept your ego as a maker is not the most important thing. It's the product itself and the quality of the product and the solid part of how the wine is becoming a wine. And then sometimes you need to accept that, okay, it goes a little bit to the left or to the right, and that wasn't what you imagined or what you wanted, but whatever, it found its own way to be something beautiful anyway. And it's quite a special thing, I think.
It sounds really special, and you must have a very intimate bond with the seasons, of course, and mm-hmm. nature. So we've spoken with some other people who say that they can actually, so this is a big, perhaps a bit dark topic, but that they can feel climate change in seasons. Can you feel that here? Are the seasons more dramatic? You mentioned the hailstorm, or is that, has it always been like this?
I don't know, the 6 years we have been here, it's been dramatic. every year. We have had earthquake, heat wave, too much rain, and then
no rain at all.
No rain at all. Hailstorm.
Yeah.
Tornado. We had like, and maybe it's because of climate changes. I don't know. They say, people who've been living here always say that they feel that they can feel it's getting warmer and warmer.
Okay.
So, and the summers are warmer and warmer, mm. and then and they also say that there is less water in the rivers than they remember when they were young. They could go to the rivers and swim all summer. Here you have water until the end of June, then it's
okay.
And last year it was very, very difficult because yeah, it was in all Europe. It was like the
driest year in France in 50 years.
In 50 years, and yeah. It was. And I think the area is still suffering, and everyone is afraid that if we have one more summer like that, mm. where are we gonna go? And also because there is less water,
yeah.
And so I think it's probably because of the climate changes. But I think sometimes we have to do something about the climate changes that I think we all agree about. But I think sometimes it's also a question about how we consume things.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the solution now here, how we talk about it here in this area, is how can we get water. How can we get more water? Can we take some water from Drôme, the biggest river here? Instead of asking ourselves, why do we have less water and what can we do to adapt to that situation? Do we need to grow differently?
Mm.
Maybe we just need to drink less. I mean, produce less. But I think that's a very... maybe I think us growing organic, we think more about the things like that, but we also live in a next to conventional wine growers who just want to make a pipeline to get water directly here, and then we just gonna empty another river. So I think that could be great if we could talk about in that way. I think because it is about all the time how can we. I think also with natural wine that now the people just want more and more natural wine, and that we are happy for that because it also means that people want to be responsible and they want to drink something that's made in a responsible way. But it also means a higher level of production, and can we manage that?
Mm.
Or
we often say,
I think it's a way of sometimes, yeah, it's okay with less, I think.
Yeah, but it's surely.
But
better.
We want to keep the same level, or we want to have more.
Mm.
Natural wine, I think it's a topic that is very discussed at the moment. What is natural wine and so on? But one thing I think for sure is natural wine is that if we exclude the part where it's the actual wine. But if you see natural wine as a concept of, a bouquet of opinions, natural wine represents for me the respect of not only what is now, but also what was before. And I think natural wine is very much giving that solution to many of these problems that we are facing today, is like organic growing, like biodynamic agriculture, in many levels, in production of meat or vegetables or fruit or whatever, in agriculture in general, the natural wine respect the status quo of where we are. And as Anne just said, I think that's the beautiful part of what we're doing, is that we can actually easily turn up and down our production depending on what is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Also because the wines are sold as they are, people are interested in buying them and so on. The biggest problem in agriculture in general and wine growing in this area is that the price for the grapes that the conventional wine growers are paid per kilo is so low that they are forced to produce a lot. per hectare. So the only way they can survive is to produce more and more and more every year.
Mm. And that means that you don't grow organic because
It's not possible. They just an example. It's a stupid thing, but it's about numbers. We produce between 15 and 25 hectoliters per hectare. So it's roughly 3,000 bottles per hectare at the most. Some conventional winemakers, they do up to 200 hectoliters. So 10 times more per hectare than we do. And you can only do that if you put water in the vineyards, if you kill everything that is not supposed to be there except the vines. And it makes the plant suffer a lot because it has to produce a lot. It's like you demand of me to walk 5 kilometers every day, and the guy next to me has to run 50 kilometers every day. When 1 week is gone, I'm still in a good physical condition. The other guy will be tired because he run 1.5 marathon every day. It's not possible. And the same goes for the vines, and the same goes for the soil and the nature around it. And it starts to make an unbalance that is now so extant, because it's not only in winemaking, it's also in all the other kinds of agriculture and all the other kinds of industry that we use too much. And instead of drinking one bottle, we have to drink a 5-liter bag and box of cheap wine, and we buy 2 breads at the baker instead of buying 1 bread and eat an apple. And it's just a way of thinking where when this teacup is broken, I throw it out and I buy a new one, because it's easy to get a new one, instead of taking care of it and save it and buy a better quality, or I don't know, whatever. I don't have the solution just in front of me, but I think to go back to natural wine is that with making natural wine, we take a step back and we think more of how the things were done than how they should be done in the future. So the response of the answer to the problems that we face today, we search in the past instead of looking into the future and saying, okay, we do a pipeline from the Horn River, we create the hybrid grapes, we cover with the plastic stuff and have helicopters flying all over the place to get the birds away. Instead of doing all this, we adapt what's going on as they would do 200 years ago. I don't want to sound as a medieval farmer that is, you know, walking into the vineyards with my donkey, but it don't has to be that old and that old-fashioned thinking, but we need to respect that moving forward is not always forward. It can also sometimes be looking a little bit over the shoulder and see how things were done before.
Yeah.
And the river's drying out. It's because we use the water.
Yeah.
Because the water is still running from the mountains, and it's because it goes elsewhere and it creates a problem for us. So we have to change something.
Yeah.
And and I think it's changing to something that was there before, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in this bigger perspective, where you, if I understood you correctly, constantly, and you work in this bigger time picture, is there an aspect of this where you feel like you work in a specific tradition of making wine in the cellar, for example, or do you feel totally free from the wine tradition of this area when you arrived? Did you have like a feeling that you had to make wine in the cellar, the vinification, in a specific way, or did you just...
No, not at all. it's very much linked to what Anne said before with the parents or the grandparents being on your shoulders all the time. We didn't have that. And when I started in 13 and when Anne and I started making wines together in 17, it was very much driven by a curiosity of exploring as much as possible, but also trying to do things differently. And later on, also simply making the wines that we want to drink. We don't think so much of the market where they should be sold, because it's impossible to please everybody. And it's much more fun to and interesting to make the wines that you want to drink yourself. And also it becomes to represent who you are in some way, in some extent at least. And I mean, our way of making the wines is changing all the time. Actually, we don't repeat ourselves in any, we don't have any rules for what we do, except of the dogma we just talked about, organic things, labor, all these things. But the actual vinification is very, very simple things. We work everything by hand. We de-stem all the grapes, we press directly, mix, macerate, do things. It's all done by us, and it's all done by hand. And from there on, it can change a lot. You know, it can be, we never made the same wine two times. And now it's been almost, not almost, it's been 10 vintages now. So it's quite a lot of wines that have been made.
Yeah.
If you look at single cuvées, and we never made one wine two times. And it's also liberating in some way that you can.
But I think also in the beginning, it was not always our choice, because since we were buying grapes in the beginning, it was not possible for us to say, okay, we would like 2 tons of Merlot and Syrah, because we had a recipe we wanted to follow. So we were very like, okay, this is what we can get from this wine grower, so this is what we can work with.
Yeah.
So I think that so we had to adapt to that condition, and so
Yeah, and also
but I think it gave us the years after, it gave us a freedom, because we were not dependent on that we could have that quantity of that and that and that. We could just, okay, fine, and then we see where it goes.
Yeah, and winemaking is often tied up to the terroir, so we go back to Burgundy where we started talking about, but it's this very known, very expensive parcels, the Pinot Noir from this, the Chardonnay from this area, and so on. And here we have a complete liberty in some way. And it's a way to, I often say when we talk about our wines that they represent a moment in our life, because it's like a written piece of paper or text for somebody, or a piece of music for somebody, or a painter making a picture. They produce the same style of expressions all the time, but it's changed constantly. I think our wines the same can be said about our wines. They have in general the same expression in some way, all of them more or less, but they are different, because one was made in 1 year, the next one was made in another year. In 19 we wanted to make some wines in a lighter way, because it was super warm, you know, so we wanted only to drink white wines and rosé, so all our wines basically from 19 is lighter wines. In 18 it was raining, so we have a little bit more stronger wines. And you know, so if you see them as products of, or pictures, or I don't know how to say it, but moments in our life, I think it's a more precise description actually.
And can you describe what you think that the wines have in common, or is it that thing that's beyond language, sort of like all these different?
This is very difficult. There was one asking the other day, how would you describe your wines to someone who never had, who don't know you? And it's very difficult, I think, it was very difficult for us to make that, because but I can easily say, that's a real Vril and Papillon wine, or Maud wine, someone we know here from the area, because we know them, and we often talk about, for the new winemakers, that they will find their identity during the the years, because it's not there in the beginning. So and with that, it means that when you drink a wine, it's nice to say, ah, that wine, that's from Maud. It's really Maud, you know, or it's really Marie and Geraldine. But I don't know, but maybe it could be interesting if we ask someone what they were thinking. I don't know, but
I'm not sure I'm there to do that.
I don't know if we would like to know it, but I think it's, I don't know. In some way, I hope that when people drink it, they can recognize if they know us, but not everybody knows us. So it's,
yeah.
It's, I mean, not what, that, what? But how it reflects our who we are, and I think. But for me, we don't. It's not because we disagree, but you. I think you are more. I'm more practical thinking. Like, I like to drink wine that makes me feel good or taste good in good company with good friends and good family, and then that's fine for me.
Hmm.
But I think it's difficult to answer. I cannot answer the question.
No. Yeah, but I can answer. I can maybe not complete your phrase, but it's not what I want to. But add something to it, because Anne has a good point. She likes the wines that are, in a very positive way, said simple. So rosé wines, light red wines, white wines that are pleasing to drink, pleasant to drink.
Well,
and I also have I really want to make wines that are pushing the edges. So, I mean, for most of our wines, the most important thing for us, at least I talk for myself, Anne can say whatever she wants. But for me, the most important thing is the complexity of the wine. It has to be flavor-wise and structure-wise playing on as many levels as possible. And it has to be not only flavor-wise, but also intellectual, has to feed you when you drink it. Has to start something in your body or in your brain or in your emotional system. It has to trick something. Otherwise, I think I missed out. Some people get it, some people don't. That's the game. I respect and understand. But what I really need from the wines is that I get these things myself. I want to be moved emotionally when I taste our own wines. And also, it can be good and bad, because in the cellar we have wines that I think are very horrible. You know, at the moment they will be good one day, but I don't like them. And when I pass by them, I have a hard time with them. I taste them. Sometimes I just walk by and I know the barrel are there, and I know they don't taste good. Or maybe they taste good for some people, but I don't like it. And these emotions are also they're also giving me a positive force to move forward. Otherwise, I'm completely in love with them. I could go down in the cellar, I could drink a half a bottle every day without a problem. I can't do that, because then there will be nothing left when we should bottle it, and there will be nothing to sell. That would be stupid. But that's what is driving me. This passion of making the wines the best wine in the world, but not understood as the best wine compared to all the other winemakers, or winning a competition. It's not in that way, but the best wine in my world. I want to push the wines as far as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I, opposite to Anne, I think, I have no problem pushing them further out than the edge of where the wine should go. I have no problem if they fall down in the open space of where wine is no longer wine, or where they don't taste good anymore. For me, it's okay, because we went all the way out there. And if they fall and it breaks and it becomes complicated, the experience was good enough for me. But playing safe and staying 50 meters from the edge, because the wine is still nice and we don't risk anything here, it's so boring to me. And that is a part of what we do I cannot accept to do, because I think it's not feeding me. And it's stupid to say, because what I like most about other winemakers is this style of wine. I have a huge respect we have French winemakers in the village that are so strong and intelligent winemakers and skilled in techniques, and they make so safe wines. Their wines are perfect every time, and I'm very fascinated about it. I can't do it myself, and it doesn't interest me at all. I love their wines. I am very fascinated about what they do, but I couldn't copy it into my own cellar. And in our way of working, it would be, I will, just the fact that we should make the same wine every year, over and over and over and over again, with the same name, the same assemblage of grapes, the same terroir. It's just the thought of it. It tires me. It doesn't interest me at all. So it's a very, it's a way of expressing what we're doing. And I think, there are different kinds of way of producing, and people talk about wine being artistic or not artistic, and an agriculture product or something more philosophical or whatever. And there's so many layers of this, but I really see with the wines as our media, our little box in a garden where we step on it, step up, and we can say stuff either with words on the labels or as flavors in the wines. We can communicate to people, and we can send the bottles to Tokyo and New York and Mexico City and whatever they go. And people will not listen, but they will drink our message. And I think they will get it. The people that are prepared to understand it, they will understand it. And yeah, I get a little bit excited when I talk about it, but it's really what is a big force. I mean, it's driving me forward, you know, in some way. It's, yeah. And it's also what is interesting in the winemaking process, which is really from us the day of harvest, and then 6-7 weeks, maybe a few months from there. And the rest of the year, we're just looking at the barrels, tasting them, but we basically do nothing until bottling. But in this process of harvesting and making the wines is what is on my mind most of the time. This doubt, this insecureness about how would the wines end up, what are they presenting, what are the grapes trying to tell us, and how can we transform their language or words or whatever you like to call it, their expression, into something that people will understand. Because we're just a filter in some way from the grapes and the vineyards. It goes through us and they go out into the bottles and out into the world. And it's a very important little, you know, I don't know, say keyhole where we need to push everything in and let it pass through, you know. And there's a lot of responsibility as well. And then there's this thing where wine are getting put up on this pedestal, and as Anne said, she likes to drink wine as because it's a wine and it's nice and it has to taste good and all these things she said in the beginning, which is true. But wine also has this dark side of being a social measuring stick, where I know better. I visited this winemaker you didn't, I tasted this wine that you don't know about, all these things. And I can take the glass up, swirl it around, put my nose into the glass. Just by physical acts, I can communicate that I know a lot about wine, and it gives me a certain kind of position in a room of people eating and drinking wine, which I think is not so good. But it's very much part of wine, and it's so dominant, and it's a little bit stereotype talk I do now, but it's a little bit the old school, old man format of what wine is. And when that's said, that is what is so beautiful and nice about it, the natural wines, is that it's an open format. Young people in Paris or in Lyon, they buy a bottle, they open it, and they drink it on the side of the canal or the river by a plastic cup. Because they don't care. They don't care if it's Gamay or it's Pinot Noir or it's from Alsace or Languedoc. They just want a red wine, and they want to talk to each other and listen to some YouTube stuff and talk about a book they read a few days ago. The wine is not important. It's just the liquid they drink as a beer. Natural wine has this quality of being for everybody. And I hope it will stay like that, because it's also what natural wine is now turning into, is because it's getting more and more famous in a way, it also get more, there's more and more connoisseurs that are searching to put it up on this winemaker is that good, this winemaker is a philosopher or a poet or whatever, punk or whatever they can be. And by that way you create these figures and egos, and that way also the importers and the sommeliers and the people drinking, they can put themselves up there as well. And it's not serving the wines very well, I think.
Mm.
Because it's made with another purpose in the beginning.
Yeah.
Especially the wines that we make, I think also that Anne talked about before, that has to be nice, just nice, you know, nice white wine on the terrace in the sun. It can be, it can have all these complexities that I talk about, that is really my ambitions for my own production and my own self in the wine. But the main part is really a slice of bread and a cheese and a glass of wine. It has this simplicity to it.
Yeah.
And we should not forget that.
Yeah. It's so funny when you say that, because we, Cecil and I, had one of your wines, the one called We Forget So mm-hmm. Easily, and it was really a huge experience, and the two words that came to my mind were edgy but inviting. Mm. Like if a person at a party in the corner is a bit edgy, but your first person is super warm and inviting at the same time. Those are the two words that but do you, in terms of vinification, do you already have plans now for what you want to do with the grapes this season, or it arrived way further?
It's difficult to say, because we don't know how, it depends on how, if it's a hot summer, not a hot summer, if it's raining, it depends on the season, I think.
Yeah.
But I also think, I know that we say we change every year, and we also do that, but I think we have a way of working which is the same way. And I think during the years we are more and more, like, we're getting, I think we're getting better to choose the right way to go when we are making the decisions. And I think also we are more and more aware of what we want to
yeah, and what is possible and what is working in our cellar.
Yeah.
But
I don't know
the choices of what we want to make.
Mm.
I mean, indirectly, it's in the making, because when we taste a glass of wine from somebody else, you get inspired.
Mm.
And then you start to see a little thing in your head, and you, I remember this, or I remember that when harvest come. But as Anne said, with the season and also the flavors of the grapes, some things are possible, some things are not possible, and you only know it the day of harvest.
And then sometimes it's also a practical question.
Yeah.
I mean, it's boring to say that, but that's also winemaking.
Yeah.
I mean, but I think it's also important to say that we can have all these high thoughts of what we want to do and where we're going to, and that's also a big part of it. But another big part of it is also, for example, we harvest with another winemaker.
Mm.
So, because then we have the same harvest team, and then we can, then they have work every day, because we don't have harvest at our place every day, and neither has he. So we share it, and so sometimes it's also a practice. Okay, we can take the team that day, you take them those days. It's gonna rain tomorrow. Okay, then we have to wait 3 days, and so that's also the reality. And the press is not empty. They're not fermenting in as fast as we like. Okay, we don't have an empty cuve. We don't have and that's the situation. So.
Yeah, and you taste the grape and you think it's possible to make this beautiful wine. And then, as I said, all these practical stuff occurs and it pushed the harvest 2, 3, or 4, 5 days later. And you taste the same grape and it's not the same. And then you just, everything that you fixed on ideas and things you want to make, you have to change.
Yeah.
And
sometimes, like last year, where we had to make the, what is it called? Not the décuvage, where we had to take the grapes out from the tank,
yeah,
And you realize when you're starting to do that, you don't have enough space in the
press
to press it all. And then you're like, what do you do?
That's a good example.
Yeah, but because you have an open tank with wines and grape coming out, you have a press, you have two or three workers standing and pressing, and then you're like, fuck, what are we gonna do?
Yeah, but that's a good example.
Close the tank, think 2 minutes.
No, but Anne has a good point, because that is a wine that when we made it, it was a 2020 wine with mainly the grapes of our own vineyards. We de-stemmed all the reds, big parts of the whites, and we let them macerate red and whites together in the juice of a white wine, of a white juice. And that was the main idea. And when we pressed, as Anne said, we took out the juice, we took out the grapes, and when we had taken roughly half of the grapes, the press was full. So we had a cuve, the tank, where the grapes were still inside. And when you asked before, did you already have an idea of what to do? There was already an idea of what to do. But there we were in the middle of a pressing of wine, and we couldn't finish what we were doing. So we had to come up with another thing. And actually, in that moment, it was really fast we took decisions. Some years before, I had an idea of making another wine where we, as you make tea, you make one brew, you make another brew, you make another brew, and every time it changed flavor.
But on the same
leaves of tea. And I've been thinking about this technique of tea making since we were in Japan together some years ago, and I want to try this in winemaking, to do maceration several times on the same grapes. But we never had the chance to do it, and in other conditions of logistic things, it was not possible for years. And then by strike of luck, or not luck, I don't know how to say it, the possibility was there. So I said to Anne, you remember I talked about this 3 years ago, and I want to do this, and we can do it like that. Now is the time. We take out the grapes, we press, we take another juice, we fill up the tank again with the rest of the grapes and a new juice, and we leave it to macerate another 5 or 6 days just to see what's happening. And then we, of course, a week later, we emptied the tank and we pressed quietly, and it became nice. Now the two things are mixed, so they became one wine after all.
Yeah.
But it was, that is really winemaking in my opinion. It's, there's no recipe. There's no recipe. There's no way to do it.
No, but there is
for
no,
us at least.
It's true. There is no recipe, but you don't do it out of nowhere. You still have some background and your education telling you where in what direction to go. I think
sure.
I know you say it all the time, but I don't think you will be able to make good, simple, quality wine if you don't know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
No. I think that goes hand in hand.
Yeah, but it's true, because
You don't think you use it, but you use it all the time. So, because making a decision like that is also risky if you don't know that it is possible. It could turn out to be very bad, but then you have a lot of wines you have to throw out. But
Yeah, it's true. Intuition is always tied up to some kind of knowledge,
yeah.
Because otherwise you have it's just craziness. So. I think we are working very much by intuition, especially in the winemaking process. But it's true, as you said, and it's always tied up to some kind of either experience that we made ourselves, or knowledge or experience we have extracted from other by visiting other winemakers.
Have you ever had a season where there was no major surprise? You ever did that?
Not really.
There's been smaller surprises every year, I think.
Yeah.
So you're getting used to it.
Yeah. No, but I think it's also it sounds dramatic when we talk about it, but it's also a nice way to work, I think.
Yeah.
At least it gives me at least an energy, I think, for you as well, Anne. But this,
I think it's also an exception of that there are, I think sometimes the more you try to control things, the harder it gets for you, because it's it's impossible to control everything.
Yeah.
So even though we want to most of the time. So I think sometimes of, but I think for me, it's also easy for me to say because it's not my education, and sometimes it's been more easy for me to say, okay, that's, I'm just going to put it on him because he knows what he's doing. But maybe it would have been different. But I think it's the same with nature, and we talk about it often. It's, I cannot, it doesn't stress me if it's too hot or too cold or too much rain, or because that's really something I cannot do anything about.
Mm.
I can do a lot of things to improve the conditions of our work and vineyards and everything, but that we don't have any.
Yeah, the weather, we can't do anything.
That but it's true, doing harvest, you could be more, I think, winemakers working, if they know what they want to do with that grape and that grape and that grape, they organize their work after it, I think.
Yeah.
But since we don't work like that, we don't. I think we're very organized. It's not that, but it's, it doesn't stress us out if something is not going as planned. Sometimes it does, but
less, I think.
But I think sometimes in the harvest, you don't have the time to get stressed about or worried. You just sometimes need to, okay, this is the decision. We're gonna go for it, and then we're just gonna hope. And sometimes we have wines that are not ready to be.
Yeah, but
they, sold
it also
the
happens.
Next
for example,
years,
for example,
so
the wine you just talked about, you had in Paris, I imagine.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a white wine originally, and the white wine is a 19 wine. That is 19 is one of the warmest vintages in France in many years. This year, 22, it's warm. 19. 17 a little bit, 15 a little bit, and 2003 very, very warm, and then before there was a few as well, but 19 was one of the first very, very warm years in recent winemaking history in France. And I was fixed on the idea of making white wine, but the white juice was not in balance. There was no freshness, there was no I mean, the bitterness and the richness of the wine was too strong, and the finesse of elegance was not in place. So we decided to add other grapes, and finally also red grapes. So the white wine that we want to make became a red wine. So it's, and that I think is would stress many people, because if you have your cuvée of this grape, white, yeah, but it has to be white and it has to be this grape. And in our way of letting the wines become wine, we just, it doesn't matter. We can just add something else and it becomes another wine, completely new wine we've never seen before, but it makes the wine more interesting or better or performing better or going in a direction that is more interesting.
Mm.
So it's, yeah.
It's a constant flexibility.
Yeah, in some way.
So I think you already mentioned so many interesting aspects on the title of this series, but it's natural wine, art or agriculture. So I just wondered if we could tie some of the stuff together that you've been mentioning. So actually, I want to jump right into it. Do you view natural wine as an art form?
I think we should start because we discussed that a lot.
Maybe it's an art form, but it's not something I pay attention to. I don't say we make art. I see it more as a craftsmanship than art, I think. I understand why people consider it as art, but sometimes I'm also like, oh, it's a glass of wine, for God's sake. But it depends on how you talk about art and how, and I know you see it completely different than I do,
yeah.
But I think I don't know, maybe it is and maybe it's not, but I don't know if it makes a difference. So that's why it's not something that I have reflected a lot of about, and maybe it's just something inside me, but sometimes when people start to talk about it, I get like, but
back off.
No, not that, no, but not, I don't know, I don't, I it, it, and then sometimes I think, okay, but what would happen to you if you start to think about it as art? But I don't know, there is something inside me that's like, ugh. And I without explaining it, but
yeah, but it's also, if you see wine as art, you also see, you need to see the winemaker as an artist. And I think that's the real clash, because some winemakers, surely they see themselves as artists, but most of them, 99% of them, don't. And they see themselves as wine growers or farmers or whatever they can be, but not artists. And that's the part of what Anne said that I agree with, is that it is just wine. It is just a product of the earth and hand craftsmanship and these things.
But, and a way of living, I think.
Yeah, but that's all these aspects. But but if you need to talk about wine as being art, which I think you can argue it is, it's because art is not about an expression, it's about an impression. Art becomes art when it moves people. I can make a drawing and nobody would pay attention, meaning it's not art. You could make a painting, everybody would love it, start to cry, laugh, fall in love with it, because it's art. Because you manage to communicate something that moves people. So some bottles of wine are art, because it has this capacity or ability to move people in certain directions or move them emotionally. I have it myself. I drink wines from other winemakers and I get emotionally moved by them, as I do with our own wines in some way. And I know through social media we get messages from people. We go to tastings around France and in the world, and people contact us and they are... We feel them emotionally, they're very engaged in what we do. And for me, that proves that what we do is an art form, because people are getting moved. But do I see myself as an artist? Do I see Anne as an artist? Not at all. Not at all. Not even close. Because for me, an artist is something else. This is somebody with an artistic vision or an artistic touch of something. And what we do is, it's like a very good musician. He's a craftsman, you know, like a very good architect. He's somebody that is able to build a house. You know, you have to, you need to know something to do that. It doesn't make you an artist. It makes you somebody that has this ability to do this.
Mm-hmm.
To do artistic stuff where you do provoke people or communicate stuff, it's a more volatile way of doing art, And that is, for me, the more artistic thing, where it's more flu and less craftsmanship and more emotions. Wine is not that. Mm-hmm. Wine becomes that when it touches people, but at the origin of winemaking, it's not that. It's just like a house. It's a stone, put on another stone, put on another stone, put on another stone, until it makes a house. Wine is the same. It's grapes, 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 until it makes a wine. As music is well composed music, is notes and instruments put in together in a right way. And it's not an artist making that. It's a very, very high-skilled musician. And that is a craft. So I say something and I say another thing.
Yeah, but I think it's that's why it's difficult to say, is it or is it not? I think if a winemaker thinks that it's art, then let it be. I don't have any problems with it because... Mm. But I agree with you. I don't. Maybe it's because I don't see myself with an identity of an artist. So that's also why it's difficult for me to define what we do as art properly.
Mm.
Or maybe it's my own need to just
stay in the ground.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that. I don't know. Because we talk about it a lot because it is something that is being discussed.
Yeah.
And I think also, and it's, yeah, I don't, it's, I think a lot of natural winemakers also just want to be winemakers. And I remember one time we overheard, there was a journalist also asking, like, how does it feel to make this and this and make people be moved? And he was like, I don't know. I choose this job because I like to work outside and I like to make sure that I can feed my family and we can go on vacation. So it was not deeper than that. But I think it was so nice because it was just. But it was just so honest and
yeah.
That's what we. That's also one of. Of course, we like to do what we do, but we also wanted a job where we could. Have another family life, and we want to make sure that our children has clothes and food and we can go on vacation, and this is the way we choose to do it. Mm. So
yeah, and people, you have a good point. When we talk about the production as well, it's also why we stay in the volume that we stay. We want to work reasoned amount of hours so we can be here when the kids leave for school. We are here when they come back. Luckily we are in France, so they come home very late, so we can work a lot. But no, I'm joking. But it's also you can always make a success. You can also make more and be better, but it demands other things.
Mm.
We decide to stay in a physical format of amount of bottles, amount of vineyards, and so on.
Mm.
That allows us to make what we do, not more. If we have to do more, we have to employ people, or we have to work a lot more, and it will take the time for other things that we like to do. We'll stop reading the newspapers, don't have time to read a book, don't go to the football match on the Saturdays, and so on, so on, so on. And that is not the life we want to live.
But I think we were recently, before we bought, decided to buy the house to make a new... seller, it was, we were looking at buying maybe a piece of land, buying an old farm and everything. And when we started to look at that, then you start automatically thinking, okay, then we could have like big cellar, and we could have animals, we could have a big house, we could have thousands of things that we don't have now. And then you can have to lend a lot of money in the bank and suddenly and very fast it became like a very big project, and that also could be very interesting. But at the same time we were like, why did we move? What was the point of moving here?
Mm.
And then we suddenly realized it was not to have a big, big production. It was not to have work every day. It was... with another purpose.
Mm.
And I think that going back to that idea and then saying, okay, then we buy that house and then we see what can it bring.
Mm.
And then we just had to adapt again to that situation. And yeah.
Yeah, but it also pulls us back to the core of what we both find interesting in our business and in our way of living. So it can be as I talked about before the constant search of pushing the wines to the edge, or letting the wines communicate poetically, artistically, politically, or whatever, or living a quiet life, and all these things combined, you can only do that in a certain format.
I sometimes also think that the success, or what you can call it, of the wines we make is also because it's very present. So because it's small,
mm.
as you said, we do everything by hand.
And
when you grow, you have to work in another way. Then it's more machines, or I don't know.
Yeah,
but
it's less us making.
Less
it.
Us, and
yeah,
I think it's been important for us to hold on to that part.
Would you be happier with viewing yourself as curators of nature, essentially, as an artist?
It's a good point.
Okay.
I often talk about think about that actually. As a curator, I think it's a nicer term than an artist.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's more correct actually.
It's more, yeah.
Or Felice.
Yeah.
I think it's more. Yeah, it feels more comfortable actually to. Yeah.
But many curators, they see themselves as artists, so, or at least they dress like. but also what I think, maybe if I should see myself as something that is not an artist or something like that, is to see myself or Anne as a politician. That is something that I feel more for than being an artist. Words are important to us, and the way we write on our labels is important. Because
but also the statement, the way you work is also a statement of saying this is. Of course, it's we work like this because we think it's the best way of working, and we also think it's the best way of working for the earth and the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And we really hope that it will inspire other people to work the same way, or to maybe see, okay, it is possible even though you have 4 hectares and you're only 2 persons, and or
and you put things into a bottle that people buy with money, that eventually.
Mm.
becomes a political choice.
Mm.
And so instead of voting every 5 years for
a
president.
I think the consumers has a lot of power in that.
That's
that
it,
way.
Yeah. And organic things and biodynamic things and natural wine and so on. All of it is a political choice, because you decide to buy something that is not only better for yourself, but also better for the environment and the nature and where it's grown. So the people, it's not to be angry with the people that buy conventional stuff, or yes, a little bit actually, because they it's egos. They want cheap stuff and they don't give a shit about how it's grown. So they spend their money destroying nature where things are grown. You know, you can buy, we often talk about with our kids, Nutella is a very famous product in France. Every kid in France, they eat it at morning when they come back from school. They get a tartine of Nutella. And where it's grown, it's palm tree oil, where these apes, monkeys, orangutan,
mm-hmm.
they're dying, you know. And I mean, how can you allow yourself to buy a product that is taking down the rainforest? It's completely crazy. And by buying a natural wine, by buying organic, You take your political vote and you use it every day in the supermarket or wherever you use your money. You take things from the shelf and you put your political opinion down into your basket. And that is something that I think is really important. And our wines are very much made in that spirit as well. Grown in a way, produced in a way, with people, paid in a way, feeding in a way. All these things goes together. And it is in the bottle, and it's written on the label. we are very conscious about what we write on the names of the cuvées.
Mm.
It can be often is understood as something poetic, artistic, beautiful, small sentences, and it is sometimes. But it's also sometimes, as you said, we forget too easily. For me, it's a very, very the name of the cuvée you had in Paris. For me, it's a very political thing, because we for Anne and I, it was Black Lives Matter, 6th of January, Trump election fraud, Indian women in U.S. being killed, heatwave in Europe, war in Ukraine. I mean, it's constantly there's stuff, and 2-3 months after, it's forgotten.
Mm.
I mean, we do national collective things where we collect money and clothes for people in war, and it's all good. But then two months later, a new event occurs, and we forget about it. And then it's all about that. And you post pictures on social media, newspaper only write about this. And then we do a lot of things. If you're not engaged in this, it's because you don't have any feelings for the world. And then 2 months later, it's a news thing. So we tend to forget all the time what is. And I think it's a little bit sad.
Mm.
I think we should. It's hard to take a break and focus just on one thing, because there are constantly new things and new problems. But it's not that I want people to not engage in new ones. I just wish that they would stay a little bit longer in all of them.
Yeah.
And that's what this label is about. It's a very indirect way to say to people, take responsibility. Not only one post on Instagram, but a half year, or do something more important than just very fast, instant talk.
Yeah.
Because it's too easy. And yeah, many of our labels is about that.
Have you had any strong reactions from people on your labels? Or like both in like very, when they're very inspired, but others, because you work with friends and there's always a lot of tradition here in terms of wine.
I think, I don't think we really had any bad reactions or, I think, no, I don't, I think maybe more positive things, like people relating to labels, but I also feel when we speak to different kind of people that the labels represent different things for them. It's not necessary the same thing. I think we had the tasting and the one, c'était le premier jour de vacances.
Yeah.
We met up at Nat. It's called, it was the first day of the big summer holiday. I was 16. And everyone was like, yeah, it's like, I remember that day. And then there was one saying, but isn't it a little bit sexually intimidating? I was like, what? And apparently this person was thinking about his first time.
But, like, and the summer was, break when
but,
he was 16.
But, and I was like, well, I don't get it. I was like, what? And he was like, don't you get it? No, I don't get it, because it's not, it was not the intention.
Yeah, but that's the interesting
but
part.
Afterwards, it's exactly that. I was like thinking, that's so interesting that you read it like that, because it never occurred to me that it could have anything but fine.
Yeah, but that's interesting. But with our labels, because we quite early in the winemaking project, we discovered that the way we communicate on the labels means that the bottle is put on a table, people read it or drink the bottle. And they start to have discussions about it. They start to have interaction with the label, and then by that with us. And in that way, we could communicate stuff to people that we will never meet in some way, not physically at least. And the way they understood differently is also, I think, the beautiful part of it, because all the wines for us, all the labels and all the names has a very specific, some less, but most of them, a very direct relation to the wines and to ourselves, but they are understood very differently. And if we go back to now, we move a little bit away from the political part, if it's the more poetic labels, but that is what it could argue for the art part of the winemaking is that now we are starting to have people having, I mean, that is not our expression, our way of communicating, it is their way of understanding. And that is what may can argue that it's artistic in some way, because it's understood in a way that that is understood by the person watching on the piece, drinking the wine, reading the label. And it becomes bigger than us, bigger than the wine, bigger than everything else, because it's something that happens where the wine is being drunk. And it's super interesting, I think, because it's moving away from us, out into the, in a new space, you know, in a new world where we don't, where we not necessarily are going. Labels has this function, and it's, and the wine, the quality of the wine and the wine itself communicate these things, and it's, I'm very proud in some way, but I'm also very flattered by the wine's ability of to do that.
Yeah, definitely. So at last, a question on where do you see the future of natural winemaking? That you know, obviously know a lot of people who make natural wine also. Do you have a sense that people perhaps similar to you have this like political dimension or artistic dimension to the wines, and that will become more common, less bound by tradition? Or do you see the future as mixed, as always, like there's so many different people? That is, there's not like a trend or a broader...
I want you to start on, but I have a feeling that natural wine is moving in, is in a crossway in some way, because it's a movement or a category of wine that is, there's so much now, and there's so many growers, so many makers of wine in that category, that naturally it will split up, as I would say more conventional made wine are the high-end labels of Mourvèdre Chardon and Burgundy and Bordeaux, and inexpensive wines and bag-in-box from Languedoc. It's the same category of wine, but it's very different. Natural wine has, since 15, 20 years, been a very small group of people making them, serving them and drinking them. And the totality of this group is expanding. It's growing in numbers. So I think naturally now we will have one movement, branch that is focusing on being organic and making wines with a little bit of sulfur and a little bit of filtration and some mechanical works. Some will not accept that at all. Some people will go in a more artistic, experimental way. And some will maybe go in a more classical way where they say, okay, we want to make wines that is just as good as the great wines of Chèvre Chambertin and the great Grand Crus of Burgundy and Champagne and Alsace and all these things. Why not? Because it's possible. And I think that will be the next chapter of natural wine, is that we will see the concept being 3, 4, 5 different concepts of wine, because it's now, growing, it's growing out of its own success in some way. And I think that is a great thing. And when you grow out of your own success, you need to cut off the roots a little bit and then move from there. And I think that is what will happen, I hope, in some way, because it will also be nice to follow and see. I'm curious to see how it will go.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Don't you think?
For me, I think the most important is that the wine growers and also the consumers are responsible. And I think this is a way of then it can, I hope it will grow leaves the things to think differently in the way we do farming in general.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
Anna, nice. Thank you so much for participating.
Thank you.